And welcome back. While breakdowns in cybersecurity can range from being a nuisance to downright disruptive and expensive, a major concern is the threat to national security. A joint cyber center has been in operation at Scott Air Force Base since January, another reflection of a rising national security concern. Joining me in studio to talk about the center's mission is Colonel Tom Clancy, chief of the Joint Cyber Center for the U.S. Transportation Command at Scott Air Force Base. Colonel, nice to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
Just like to read you something that came out a couple of days ago. General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, says the rise of cyber is the most striking development in the post-9/11 national security landscape. $23 billion is being invested over 4 years by the military in dealing with this. None of that comes as a surprise to you, I'm sure.
No, that's a powerful characterization of how important cyber is to the Department of Defense and our mission.
Yeah, tell us more about the Joint Center and what you can tell us about what you're up to over there.
Sure, I think it's important to kind of understand what U.S. Transcom's role is as a part of the department's combatant command structure in order to kind of characterize what we do in the Joint Cyber Center. So that U.S. Transcom is essentially the one-stop shop for all of the transportation assets in the Department of Defense, and it's a significant transportation enterprise. And what you'll see when you're operating an organization at that scale is providing information to the point of need, where decisions being made or where business is being conducted, is really a fundamental imperative. Sure. Of doing business well, effectively and efficiently.
But you don't want people snooping or eavesdropping, obviously.
That's absolutely correct. Because the mission is so important, we have to take measures to understand the context of our operation and then what are the potential ways that someone or somebody or some group could influence us in a way that creates a mission failure problem.
In as much as you can, and I certainly understand that not much can be discussed in detail, but in as much as you can, give us some sense of the kind of measures that could be taken to deal with this problem or potential problem.
Well, I think a lot of times when we're talking about cyber, we immediately start talking about technologies. And I think one of the real strengths of the Joint Cyber Center contract is that we're integrating, first of all, a fundamental very granular understanding of what the mission is and how we're accomplishing that using the systems and processes that we have, whether they're manual or in an information technology system, co-locating that with the ability to consume intelligence to provide context for that, what an adversary may intend to do, and then have that technology component very closely aligned. So it's really important to get after the context of the mission and how that's being done.
Given what you do at Scott, or what the mission at Scott Air Force Base, what kind of coordination do you have with other branches of service and other units around the country in terms of disseminating information, protecting information, that sort of thing?
That's a fundamental part of really getting the cyber security imperatives right, is that we're really learning. Mm-hmm. And the more that we're sharing those lessons, we're sharing what we're seeing, not only in terms of intelligence but what we're doing about it. It's really a conversation that has to happen, and we've got to get all of the partners in the mission kind of talking.
And on the same page, obviously. I mean, you can't have three or four different branches of service marching off in different directions.
That's absolutely correct.
Are we, the military, that is, late to the game on this? The Joint Center has only been in operation since January. The rules of engagement, as I understand it, in this cyber world, are still being defined. So are we late?
I'm not sure we're late, because we've been doing a lot of the same activities that we're doing today in more of a distributed, informal fashion. And so the Joint Cyber Center as an official organization may be recent, but the conversation that it really provides a structure for has been happening for quite some time, especially at U.S. Transcom.
Yeah. How about the use of civilians? Do you have a lot of civilians at the center, or none at all, or few?
We have a considerable amount of both government civilians as well as contractors, and you know the services very specifically have a significant challenge in terms of training an appropriate cyber workforce within the forces, and there's a lot of as you heard from Jack and Jeremy, they. You know, it's something that you really have to grow and make sure that you're retaining. And there's sometimes a mismatch in the level of expertise that's required for certain functions and what the services are providing as far as uniform members.
Now, you know where I'm going with this because it's been all over the headlines all over the media, and that is the Snowden case and the fact that, you know, here's a contractor working for the National Security Agency. My Lord, it doesn't get any more secret than that. And he's walking around with a computer full of secrets.
Yeah, that's we couldn't do the mission without our entire workforce, especially in the Joint Cyber Center. We really got a tremendous team, and part of that team requires a real fundamental trust, and quite frankly, operating with our mission partners, trust and the relationship is sometimes more important than the technologies or the specific systems that we have in place.
I wonder how long it takes to get a security clearance for someone to join your team, an outside contractor, for instance.
Well, as a part of the way that contracts are described, the contractor provides of someone who's already cleared. So from our perspective, we don't see the kind of lag of someone who shows up and they don't yet have a clearance, unless, of course, it's a contract that was pre-existing and we've added some clearance requirements, and then, you know, it's a trade-off.
Do you have any indication – again, I know there's certain things you probably can't talk about, but do you have any indication that your system over there at any time has been compromised?
Well, that would be a very sensitive subject. I think, you know, in terms of we could talk a lot about events or anything from, like you described earlier, kind of routine scanning sweeps to attempted access to systems that would be an intrusion, like you described. And we've experienced 44,000 of those types of events.
I did hear you correct, 44,000. Is that correct?
Yes. And in fact, last year it was up by four times that just for the period of last year. So that was a little bit of a spike.
Yeah, that's a spike, all right. Do we have any idea where these intrusions are coming from?
It's, you know, the analysis, attribution, and sort of capabilities assessment of those potential threats is very sensitive, not just in the government but also in the commercial sector as well.
Sure, but we do read a lot that they're coming from China and where they're coming from Russia. But I understand the fact that you can't get into that. I'm just astounded by the 44,000 intrusions. You're talking just about Scott?
No, those aren't intrusions. Those are very specifically events without any characterization, whether it's very sophisticated or unsophisticated, sort of just scans. So that it does seem a high number, but it's not reflective of any threat success.
But it does mean that somebody somewhere is going through your system and trying to find something.
Now, and going through is just to be clear, that's includes attempts at the boundary that are being blocked. So there's no characterization of success.
So they don't necessarily get in, but they're just kind of looking around, snooping, as the word might be.
Any of those. It's a very umbrella term, events.
Yeah. Is this the battleground of the future?
Well, I think it's a part of the battleground of the future. Traditionally, we've conducted operations in the domains of the sea and land and historically more recent in the air and space. And cyber is another domain. In that regard, sometimes the activity is heavily cyber with impacts or sort of correlation to activity that's occurring in one or more of the other domains. Sometimes it's the other way around.
If someone should get in, what recourse do you have?
Well, the Joint Cyber Center is because we're integrated right there with the U.S. Transcom Fusion Center, the sort of nerve center for all of the transportation operations that are occurring around the globe. We take each case as it is, and hopefully because we're consuming the right intelligence and kind of looking into the future, we're going to proactively, ideally, either institute some sort of alternate business practice, or we'll take non-technical or technical measures to allow the mission to get done with as little negative impact as possible.
Yeah. I asked the question to the group that was in here earlier about are we running behind? It was kind of what I was asking you before, but are we, in a sense, really playing catch up in this whole game? Or do you think that the potential adversaries are ahead of us?
I'm not sure how I would characterize that. I think we're making a lot of good progress. Mm-hmm. And that's probably as good as I would say.
It's a difficult subject to really peel back the layers of this particular onion because there's a lot of stuff that can't be talked about.
And, you know, the military is a fairly regimented organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes some time to change the way that we do business very yeah. specifically. And I'm actually very proud of the way that the services and the department as a whole have really – got after this problem.
We have to, for the record, have to state that while we are certainly concerned about our own national security and people who might be intruding, you know, whether it's the corporate world or the military, that we also do a little bit of this around the world. I think it's well known that we have been involved in some of these attempts to gather information from other places. You're not going to comment on that, and I wouldn't expect you to. But I think of the Stuxnet program, for instance, in which it's alleged that we disrupted the Iranian nuclear program via computer hacking. So it's going on, obviously, all over the world, and we are involved. Let me take a phone call here. We have Tom calling from South County. Tom, go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Thank you. People who are interested in this topic will know the name of Richard A. Clark, who used to be the head of cybersecurity for the whole country and reported to the president's office. He was the intelligence professional who stood up before the 9/11 commission and turned to the families and said, I'm sorry we let you down, and took responsibility for that. And he has several novels out where he tries to reach the public about these topics. And I just wonder, now that he's out of government, if he's still a voice that is listened to by people who are working in this area for our country. Thanks.
Can you address that?
I'm not familiar. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that specifically.
What about coordination between military and the civilian world? I mean, is the military often only in a world of its own and not working with the civilian world in this?
No, I think very specifically at U.S. Transcom, a great deal of our transportation operations are conducted by commercial carriers, up to 90%, depending on what's going on at the time. And so in that regard, our mission information and the mission itself is taking place in the commercial sector. And that's an area where we don't have the responsibilities and authorities to secure the information like we would if they were specifically Department of Defense information systems. Mm-hmm. So it's in our interest to continue to provide information to them and to really make sure that those relationships are working. We've taken measures to add specific language to contracts so that information sharing is a part of the services delivery. And there are a number of programs at the Department of Defense level, specifically about the defense industrial base, where companies can voluntarily join an information sharing partnership.
Who is overall in charge of this? I'm sure that there's an office in the Pentagon that there is a four-star general probably sitting there who is overseeing all of this for all of the services. Is there such an operation?
Well, I think this because cyber is the domain that it is, and it's so characteristic of how we're conducting all of the operations. Is this is the commander in chief's business, and at every echelon where there's a mission imperative, there is a cybersecurity imperative as well.
Sure. What from your perspective, getting back to your joint center, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing there right now?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think
it's probably more than one.
Yes. Yeah. I think we're continuing to develop how cyber is a part of our day-to-day operations and our planning and the strategy for the future. Because it really does imply that there are some fundamental changes we have to make in the way that we do business, and we're attacking those as aggressively as we can.
Are we, as a country, do you think, and again from the military perspective, are we on the offense here or the defense?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I would be in the right place to characterize mm-hmm. that.
Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm confident in our capabilities, and I think that our heroes that are in the effort are doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. What is your own background when it comes to this the cyber world? And
well, I got into this business as an armor officer, and right about the time that computers started showing up in the company orderly rooms, I thought I was seeing something interesting happening in the way that we do operations and support them using information technology. So I had an opportunity to take on a functional area, and through a sequence of developmental experiences, here I am.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned the rules of engagement a little while ago, and they're still being written because we're still trying to figure out a lot of this stuff. Can you give me any sense of what of how we respond to these things, that, again, if someone gets in or if there is more than just someone scanning the perimeter?
I think we recognize that these sorts of things are important and have a potentially a dramatic negative effect on our operations. So we go right into the operational execution and change the way we're doing business if necessary. To address a potential cyber problem.
Have you had to do that very often?
I could speak to that.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating area. I wish, and I certainly understand why we can't, but I wish we were able to peel the onion just a little bit more. You have quite an amount of paperwork in front of you here. What else do you want us to know about the joint centers to reassure us that we're doing all we can to stay safe?
Well, I think the key part, because your program is on the education programs, I think it's in the national interest to continue to develop a workforce that's competent and ready for a cyber future. And the national security depends not only upon those members who are uniformed service members, but also throughout government, the public sector, commercial enterprises, in the infrastructure of our country. I mean, we have to sort of make that a national priority and figure out how to grow the right number of folks with the right experiences so that they can continue to forge the way ahead on this.
From what I've been able to learn, that is happening. It's going to be a slower process because education doesn't happen overnight, but it's growing at a rather robust percentage year after year, the number of people graduating who are qualified to deal with this sort of thing. So that's encouraging.
Yes, it is.
I want to thank you so much, Colonel Tom Clancy, for being with us and telling us what you can about what's going on at Scott Air Force Base. I'm sure a lot of people are reassured that we're doing something and certainly all that we can to deal with any threats that are out there, and there appear to be many of them. Thank you very much, sir, for being
thank
with
you.
Us. Tomorrow, let's talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about the historic Settlement House movement and how the social service agencies have evolved. Included in the conversation will be the leaders of Neighborhood Houses and the Guardian Angels Settlement Association in St. Louis, and with the director of the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House in East St. Louis. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.